Okay, gents, I guess it's us guys, so let's get going. And I'm Marty Parker, and I'm here to talk with you about what I hope will be interesting to you, what I call top real-life customer configurations for Link. And I'll say a bit about who we are, but first what we're going to do is talk about some of our clients, our consulting clients' actual configurations of Link and the kind of things they asked for and how it came out, and then share a couple solution ideas about that beyond what's on the excellent, I put in there, the UCOIP site. I think that's a great site, huge resource, probably best in class in the industry. I don't see anybody else. Cisco offers a lot of information, but not really as rich as that. So I'm pretty jazzed about that, but still, there are things that aren't on there customers ask for. And that's what why I thought to nominate this session, is to go a little bit beyond UCOIP. I'll just one quick to explain why I'm here and who we are. But Unicom Consulting is just a couple of us, and we're specialists in helping enterprise customers design their unified communications roadmap. Our typical client is 20, 30, 40, 80,000 employees. So it's the big guys, and they're moving down the road on unified communication. And when they get to a Link situation, they don't all turn out that way, but when they get to that point, they're asking the questions of how do I get this done? So they have a problem. We're a vendor independent consulting firm. We don't resell anything, so we don't make any money. The customers are paying us for the advice, and we don't make a dime more or less depending on what they buy. So if in the end, the vendor says, I can't do that for you, then we say, okay, bye. But usually we try to help the vendors succeed because the customer wants it. So we're often brokering. I've actually been in meetings with vendors saying, if you only would say this to them, and I know you can do it because I've seen your documentation, go do your homework. Sometimes we've got to coach them. We focus in our business about the business requirements for UC, and some of you have heard my other sessions, but we're really trying to help businesses streamline their business based on usage profiles and the workflows in their business, and then we help them create a roadmap. Where do they go from here? And so far, and I heard someone the other day use the word not yet, but so far, we haven't had any client who's gone 100% Link. But we've got lots of clients, probably 70% of our clients, have Link for enterprise voice. And that's because it's a blended environment in many cases. There's portions of their business they don't want to worry about right now. They don't want to touch. Touching phones is expensive. There's portions that are contact center, like one person told me earlier. So, there are places where they're just as happy to take out, to take the step with a specific site or division or a specific work group. Because the way the internet works, we had this with a major railroad. They happen to be here presenting. I don't know if they'll say this tomorrow, but when we worked with them 4 years ago, they figured out where the sweet spots were, and they moved 12,000 of their 40,000 people onto Link and saved millions in maintenance bills with the PBX provider. So it was those kinds of motions, because the people that they moved were the back office logistics people in the railroad, the people that dealt with a lot of documents and workflows, and Link was a better product than the PBX. So it was this kind of thing that we found, and this is the kind of, that why we get into these kinds of issues. And on behalf of our customers, because I view myself to some extent as a customer advocate, they have certain goals and agendas, and many times the account teams or the resellers don't get it right away. And the customer has some specific end result they're after. Maybe it's cost, but maybe it's transformation or responding to a line of business or something like that. They need to look smart. I would say the biggest barrier to Link success right now is a fear of failure, because the customers are in a position where it still looks like a big risk to take on Link for enterprise voice or even Link for conferencing to some extent compared to the PBX or the carrier that they bought conferencing from in the past. So there's a risk there, and they're kind of making a bet. They go home at night and say, is this going to help me put the kids through college, or will the kids finish high school and that's as far as I'll be involved? That, they actually think that. So they're wondering, is this too risky for me? Can you make it safe? They also want to avoid write-offs, and Gurdeep Singh Paul stole one of my slides, when he said, okay, we'll take on a particular legacy product. He didn't steal the whole slide, because all he said was Tanberg, but they have investments. And you know, the investments are in a PBX that might be on an 8-year depreciation cycle, or video rooms that are on a 5-year depreciation cycle, and they don't want to have to write them off. So they're going to say, let me live that life cycle. I'll start with Link now, but you know, unless you have some huge ROI, I'm not taking that other thing out and writing it off. They also want to support their professional advancement. Are they going to be seen as doing things that are oriented to the business? And they want to adjust Link to match their business needs, not vice versa. And by the way, this isn't just a critique of Microsoft. It's a critique of almost every vendor in this market space who basically more than once and sometimes repetitively keep telling the customer, you have to change to match my product. And the customers won't. I mean, they'll say, get out of my life. You know, I know what I want, and you have to listen to me. So that's the first thing. The second is, no Link is an island. It's kind of building on what I just said. It's got to live with others. You know, it's not the only communication product in their company. And, of course, it's going to have to live with carriers and cellular carriers and so forth. They want to protect their investments, obvious. They want to foster adoption. So is Link going to be installed in such a way that people grab it and adopt it? I'll come back to that a little bit later. Invest on returns. Some of you heard my session on business cases earlier, but they want to say, what will you give me back when I install Link? Now, sometimes it's the telephones. Sometimes I can merge my telephone help desk with my desktop help desk, and I'll save on staff. Sometimes it's that sort of thing. But the big thing thereafter is I can go out and I can change field service, or I can change sales, or I can change product development. I can move product development faster. There's something in their business that may give them a big return. So Link is going to need to coexist, and so we've said that already. So there are 7 patterns that we see in our life as consultants, and I'm going to talk about each one of those. You know, kind of what's the problem, and give you a diagram and talk about the actual cases. So there's the Link client for all video conferencing. I'll give you the details as we get to them. The second is expanded seamless federation. So I want federation, but it's got to be easy. I want Link voice with my existing PBX and dial plan. Okay, and dial plan. That's an important statement. I want Link with my existing desk phones. I want my existing PBX as a gateway. I want Link in other user interfaces, in other words, social. And I want Link as an applications platform or communications-enabled business processes. I mean, the 2 main demos that Gurdeep gave in the keynote were about CEBP. I'm putting Link into a healthcare interaction. I'm putting Link into a Skype-based customer contact app, you know, that kind of thing. So let's talk about those 7. Number 1, a Link client for all video conferencing. We had one client just a year ago. We started counting. There were 8 different communications clients on their employees' PCs. 8. And they don't want 8. They want 1. So that's their goal. And they think, well, I may never be able to reach that. But that's what they say. So how can I get to that point? And one of the biggest barriers to that is the video, because they don't want to say, well, I'll put Link out there, but no video. And of course, typically what happens if you say that, then you're going to get Cisco Jabber or video client or Brightstar, I think it's called, or some other client on the desktop. You're going to get either a hosted or a product, you know, the RadVision client from Avaya. You're going to get something else on the desktop, and now you're going to have a battle over how do they communicate and when do they choose one versus the other. So they want that client on the desktop to be the client, but they also have significant investment in room systems. And those work quite well. And the executives know how to use them. The secretaries all know how to use them. And so to say, well, you just need to replace them all with Link room systems, I mean, you can show them the TCO and how it would be cheaper. If you were buying a new room system, it's a cheaper deal. But they're not buying new room systems. They already own them. And usually the video rooms are managed by a separate group. I've never seen a client in 5 years where the telecom guys are owning the video rooms. It's a separate group. It may be in facilities. It may be in network infrastructure. It may be in, I've even seen it in HR. But it may be in a line of business. So they don't have control over that group. You know, they can't go out and say, you have to. And those people start saying, well, you know, I can't, I'm not going to work with you. You know, if you want to work with me, you do all the lifting. You know, I'm going to lie here and be passive. I'm not going to help you. And in some cases, they're aggressive the other way. They'll call in their vendor and say, attack, attack, attack. And so you get that problem. The video teams aren't funded for the video interoperation either. So you might say, well, you know, my link client works with Tanberg, or it'll work with X or Y or Z. And then they start saying, yes, but you're going to need a, you know, this many sessions in your busy hour. And that's going to cost me 3 more MCUs, and I don't have the funding for those MCUs. So now the link sales team, their business case is going to have to bear the freight for those gateways, right? And so you get that kind of a problem. So the customer request is, get my link client as my single primary desktop UC client. I want my link server as the primary group meeting and conferencing system. By the way, I mean, for peer-to-peer conferencing and the ad hoc conferences, not the room systems. In fact, that's a really important point. Let me emphasize that because it's not obvious on the slide. One of the things I recommend happen if you're involved in this conversation is you really put a fence around room systems. And you don't let the room system guys claim video conferencing. The conferencing is something that people do between themselves from anywhere they are, and it should be on link. And the link conferencing, if you're saying link, and of course there are a couple of other products in the market that could do this, a WebEx meeting server could do this, right? But it should be the user-oriented product. And the only reason you want to connect to the rooms is when someone who needs to be in the meeting isn't in the room. But generally, your meeting should run on the link conferencing, you know, on the link server, which has conferencing, audio, video, and web conferencing in it, and you connect to the rooms when necessary. The rooms are not the center of the conferencing universe, shouldn't be the center of the conferencing universe, in my opinion. So they want the link server as the primary group meeting and conferencing system. They want voice, video, and document sharing through that link client and link server. And they want mobile and remote workers, as I said, to join from the link client. So what we get as a picture of that is going to, you know, is going to look like this. And this is a picture off of Cisco.com. Okay, now the trick is this picture isn't on UC OIP. It's on Cisco.com, but Cisco has this picture, and I'll show you another one in a minute, off Polycom's site, which is, you know, it's also a vendor-specific video conferencing room, another market leader in video conferencing rooms. And the good news, 3 years ago, this picture would have been much tougher to do, but you still could have bought RadVision servers, MCUs, and maybe a Polycom MCU in that time frame, and hooked these things up. But the thing we're going to do in this case, Cisco has now done something nice, and I was, as a consultant, I get briefings from all the vendors. We get briefings from all the vendors as a natural course, and I almost fell out of my chair. I was on a WebEx session, but I almost fell out of my chair when I saw Cisco showing link servers on their charts. You know, they're saying, okay, we're going to make this possible because we know it has to happen. So, you know, here's my link system over here with my director pool, my front-end pool. Again, remember, this is their chart. Here's my link edge server, my external client. And I want to join an internal endpoint. Now, that internal endpoint could be a CX device on a desktop. It could be a fancy desktop video unit, or it can be a Cisco room system, Tanberg room system. So that whole, you know, you can go all the way back through the Tanberg product line for the last 5 or 6 years. So all those room systems that are out there that say Cisco and Tanberg would be represented by this up here. Now, they're going to say you need a Cisco Unified Communication Manager, CUCM, used to be called Call Manager. They're going to say you need that, and it may be. And so that's fine. Those things are cheap. You only have to buy one license. So for the cost of a server and a $500 license, you're in business. And you know, you may need a few more licenses because they're going to want a license for every one of those rooms. Notice these devices have a telephone address on them. So you're going to need an address for every room. But the server software at Cisco is free. So you don't need to pay server licensing. You just need the user licensing and the servers. And that's not hard to do. So you know, this is not for a larger enterprise, it's not a barrier. So basically, they're going to give you their Cisco Expressway is the name for it now. It came out of the Tanberg acquisition. But they've now packaged it as Expressway, And they put a back-to-back user agent in there that works off SIP trunks to the director pool. Boom. And now this person can join a Cisco meeting room. Now, I'll admit that in that case, what they're going to see on their link screen is a Cisco meeting, not a link meeting. They're going to see the Cisco meeting environment. But that's okay, because you're trying to join the video room meeting. So it'll be a little bit different user experience, but they'll be working, they'll be accessing it through their link client. So there's no Jabber client on this guy's PC. None. Okay? That's how to do it. And then they also show this part of it, which is their version of Link Edge Server is their turn server that gives you this expressway E. C is inside, E is external. So the link client's registered on the link server, so they're registered here. They don't have to go register over on CUCM. And SIP video endpoint's registered over to the Cisco UCM, and the link client's registered on the link server to video endpoint's registered on the other side. So video rooms are also the endpoints, as I said. Let's see if there's anything I haven't said. It's a Cisco video room session. Now, remember that Cisco room, it's usually running off of an MCU-like product with three or four ports on it. So the good news is that the link side should look like one session, so it'll chew up one of those ports. But if they have a habit of people dialing directly in to those sessions and chewing up the ports, maybe you got to watch out for that. That's about the only thing. If you need more ports, then you end up adding an MCU in here, another Cisco a bridge, and that'll cost more money, but let's say you don't have to. The functionality will be sufficient for, that says more, for most purposes. So the functionality is going to work for most purposes joining the meeting. And they'll say, well, you don't get all of the different things that are in a Cisco meeting, right, but you get most of what you need, like probably up to the 90% and way past what most users will notice. And it's possible to get demos of this and so forth. Now, questions about that? You can just zing me as we go along.
Can you put that conference room into AD as a resource so that you can do scheduling and get
pre-busy? Well, you could, Ed, put that into Active Directory, but I would say that the Cisco group would probably not help you. They'll just want it to be registered on UCM and let it happen there. But you could. Could you do that?
It's a resource.
The trick is I don't think that's going to work because it depends on what the company has done. Most companies with video conferencing rooms will already have a scheduling system for those rooms that's integrated into the calendar. So you probably could do it through calendar, but not you wouldn't do it through AD, if that makes sense to you. In other words, this room will already show up like a person in a calendar, so you can invite them to a meeting. Yes, well, it's going to be an Exchange as an alias, exactly. But it'll be there because of some Cisco or third-party integration to Exchange that they already have in place because they're already scheduling their rooms. So you'll probably say the right answer to your question is the room will already be the room will already be visible in Exchange as a person who can be invited to a meeting. Right. Exactly. But you wouldn't have to register it to AD. I don't think that's the language that we use. Now, this is off the Polycom site, and you know, there's the link to that as well. Remember, these slides are going to be visible and downloadable by you. What? Kind of. Well, so is Cisco. But so this is their DMA product, and it is designed to do exactly what the Cisco Expressway was designed to do. So I'm not going to go through the whole explanation again. This is basically the same picture as we just saw. You know, it's this picture, only now the link server is on this side of the page and a CUCM is on that side of the page. But the DMA is the equivalent of the expressway. So there are several ways to do this. The interesting point is that the Microsoft reseller doesn't sell either of these things, maybe. Right? And so they're not going to start here. And so if you're a client and you're starting to have these conversations, you may need to coach them a little bit. Or you may need to say, these are choices I'm willing to consider. Come back and give me the information so I know what my choices are. So any more questions about that? Okay, next one is expanded seamless federation. And this is an increasingly interesting one. How many of you use federation in your business already? Cool, okay, well, half of you, great. How many of you do it through an intermediary versus peer to, you know, company to company? How many do company to company federation? Mostly, okay. Yep. Well, so there's a huge value coming on this, and even the demo we saw of link to Skype connection is a form of federation. But almost every industry that we touch, and we touch many of them, have major reasons to be visible to their clients, to invite the client, you know, their customers. Now, not in the pure retail like Colgate toothpaste or something, but in most of them, like a law firm, a financial firm, and so forth, they have a reason to be in touch with those people and to let those people see them. And so you want to be federated with one of the ways to do that is federation. Another way, of course, is a portal login. So we're also seeing presence showing up on customer, on client portals. So if you're already using client portals for your major customers, they log in, then you just put the presence on the portal. And you can do an aggregated presence even that says, if anybody on my team, on that customer's team is available, you show the ball is green. And when they click, you give them a menu of who they want to talk to. So it's this kind of a communication connection. But if you can put that person, if you can make your lawyer or your sales rep or your team visible to the client, then they're not going to call and get busy. They're not going to call and get voicemail. They're not going to get a disappointing experience. They're going to know that they can get through and get their problem solved. So it's really important to do this both with your external customers and with your supply chain. Now, people are starting it with the supply chain first, because there's huge benefits in the supply chain, whether it's the purchasing or the logistics or those elements of the supply chain, or it's even partners. The city of Calgary is a great case study. It's up on the Microsoft site where they basically, now federate with their suppliers. They can chat with them, and when they want to meet with them, they just do it through video. They don't have physical meetings with their suppliers most of the time anymore. Maybe introductory, but not later. So lots of benefits in there, savings and speed. So the customer says, I want to easily enable UC interactions with them. And the external party can use their current or preferred UC client. Now, that's a key statement, because in many cases, they have no control. Now, if you're General Motors or somebody or Volkswagen, you can say, if you're going to be my supplier, you will use this product. But that may not be the case. And so the client may be using anything from Google Talk to AOL, Instant Messenger, to right across the line. It may be consumer-based, or it may be a non-Microsoft IM client. So how are you going to open up that door so all of those people can join you? And sure, you can say, I'm going to ask you to get Link or get an Office 365 account or something like that. That can be done, but the client will say, that's trouble. And so they want to do it without a meeting, because you can always send them a meeting invite, but that's different from being available on their desk any time of day. And now with the great mobile clients we have, even sales and service people and executives who want to be available to clients but they are mobile will also be available, which they weren't on a telephone number in the past typically. So it's this kind of capability to improve relationships and speed up projects. And more, of course, we don't just get IM and presence. We get peer-to-peer voice and maybe peer-to-peer video. Okay, and of course, we saw a little bit of that with the video to Skype. But more importantly, peer-to-peer on the IM on the UC client. And you want to avoid IT administration to the external party. Some of you probably have open federation. You just basically let the federation happen automatically. Some of our financial services clients or healthcare clients aren't so interested in that. So, they're basically saying, we want more control. So one of the ways that we see this being solved is, and I'm not trying to make this a commercial because there are several services out there, but one, we're seeing the growth of federation services in the mix. And these are pretty cheap. As I understand NextPlane's pricing, you basically can have their service for approximately $1 per account per active user per year. You know, it's really trivial. And basically what it does is it says, okay, I'm going to get on to next plane here as a UC exchange, and then people using, actually the way to do it is go over here, people using social or Skype or Google Apps or IBM SameTime, Cisco Jabber, Cisco WebEx, Cisco Cup, OpenFire, you know, kind of a broad menu, and I'm sure they'll keep expanding it. But this is the kind of functionality they can provide to a Microsoft Link 2007 R2, 2007 R1. So basically, that should say now Link 2013 as well. So basically, their menu, no matter which version of Link you're on, or OCS, they're going to give you that capability. And this will get published out through their service, and your clients or users or partners go subscribe to that. It doesn't cost them anything to join. If you've paid, you'll pay for them to join, but it's still very efficient. They're probably their best claim to fame, and I'm sorry if I sound like a commercial for them, but there are others, but I've interviewed them particularly, and we've used them in cases. But GM uses this service and has 300,000 of their supply chain members on the service. So they basically opened the door. But this provides a safe intermediary because, you know, on the back side of this, there's all sorts of encryptions and protections and, integration layers that can be controlled at the GM end or the subscriber end. So it's an idea. Any of you use a federation service? Okay, well, it's just an idea. And, you know, some of you that are in the hosting business in the room here might find there's a chance to be in that business. Okay, well, now we come to one that's much more common. So the first one was pretty common. The second one is, I'd say, emerging. People are still figuring out how to use IAM and presence across business lines. But this one is everywhere. And this is the one that, you know, this is the first loaded gun that the telecom manager will draw. You know, when you show up and say, I'm going to put in Link, they say, dial plan. Boom, 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 boom. You know, and I'm in charge of the dial plan, and you can't touch it. And aren't I right, Ed? Yeah, that's right. So they've spent a lot of time and money usually on building out that dial plan. And if they're multi-location, they may have two-digit and three-digit prefixes by site, and they may have configured the dial plan so that the branch manager is always extension 101, and, you know, lots of cool stuff. Okay, it's cool. So I've got my existing PBX is working fine. I may have upgraded it recently, so it's an investment. You know, I'm telecom, and you're IT, or you're the exchange group, or the apps group, or whoever you are. And I own voice, so what are you doing? And any of this sound right? And the users are document and device-centric, and that's your response. I mean, I'm talking about Link to you because my users are document-centric, collaboration-centric, device-centric. And they want UC in their email, and they want the docs on their devices and so forth. So I want, you know, the customer actually wants that to happen. And I'm already licensed for Office for all the knowledge workers. So I've already bought the licenses. And the licenses include IAM Presence and the standard Cal and the Enterprise Cal. And for just a small amount more, I can add the Plus Cal and do Enterprise Voice. So the customer says, I want to use Link on PCs, Macs, and devices with Outlook and with Office Docs, and I want to make and control calls from the Link client, and I want to use the existing dial plan and avoid costly rework and user retraining, and I want to show busy status of users when on a PBX and IPBX call, and I prefer not to use the PBX and the IPBX vendors' clients or Link plugins. Okay, number four, by the way, we're going to come to plugins in case four, but in case three, I don't want to use those plugins, Cookie Mock, Cookie Link, Avaya, CA, ACA, Avaya Collaborative Application. I'll show you why later, but that's what they say. So the main solution, the most brilliant solution we've seen, this actually came from a Microsoft partner up in Toronto, Canada, and it does not use, it doesn't use the CSTI integration, CSTA integration, doesn't use that. It's basically parallel dial plans, and it's brilliant because it basically says, fine, you can have your dial plan, and I'm going to put a dial plan over here on Link. And a simple way to explain it is imagine I take all the numbers in the enterprise, and I had either add one digit to them or make them all be E.164 numbers, 11-digit dial or international dial. So I just basically put that in front, and the two dial plans sit next to each other. It's no different than a central office next to a PBX. But basically, the users on either side can call the way they've always called, and the call will get routed, okay, based on rules in the PBX or rules in Link. So on the PBX side, basically incoming calls are, let me do the diagram first. So here's a Link configuration. You know, here's a SIP trunk. Now these trunks don't touch the PSTN, they're just internal. Okay? And if my PBX is a SIP-enabled PBX, I don't need a gateway. I can just go directly into the PBX on a SIP trunk. If it's not SIP-enabled, if it's a T1-based legacy PBX, and the vendor wants, pick a number, $100,000, $1 million to upgrade it for SIP trunks, forget about it. Just put a gateway in. This is a SIP to T1 gateway. Okay, and so here's all my phones over here. I can put, you know, Link devices over here on the desk or not. Probably I won't. Again, we'll come to that in the next case. Maybe I put my UM over here, and I do call coverage to my UM server there if I want. So my UM shows up in Exchange with speech to text on it. But incoming calls are routed simultaneously by the PBX IPPX to the PBX phone and to Link. So almost every PBX out there that's less than 10 years old has the ability to SIM ring, simultaneously ring. Okay, so I can say ring here and at the same time ring there. And the ring there is a Link, is basically passing that out over the SIP trunk to Link. So both are going to ring. And the PBX is smart enough that whichever side of that bridge, of that fork, whichever side answers, it'll stop ringing the other side. So you're using the brilliance of PBXs, you know, a century's worth of brilliance built into a PBX. Use that, and you're going to SIM ring, and whoever answers first, you got it. Internal calls from the PBX IPPBX phone, again, simultaneously ring the PBX phone, and they route to Link. So internally, I do the same thing. If a Link client, if I'm over on this side, and I call, the Link client calls will ring that party's Link client. So I call somebody else in the company, and of course, remember they've got two, they've got a desk phone and a Link client. So it'll ring their Link client, and Link can route that call to the PBX for the desk phone, as if it were a home phone or a remote phone. Outbound calls from either side route via the IPPBX through a gateway, not this gateway necessarily, maybe a separate one to, you know, an SBC, or may just be a T1 connection into the PBX, or sorry, into the PSTN. So I've got all of my different scenarios covered with basically a simultaneous ringing model off of parallel dial plans. And the reason that doesn't bother anybody particularly is the people over on the Link side aren't dialing numbers anyway. They're calling from directories, they're calling from email, they're calling from IM and so forth. So you don't teach them to dial E.164. You don't teach them to, you know, if you put a 6 in front of every number and make, you know, 5-digit dial plan, 6-digit dial plan, they don't know about the 6-digit dial plan. Okay? So it's that kind of a model. And this works. It's actually simpler. It's amazingly, you can say, well, it's a little bit of complexity setting up the dial plan on this side, but that's a one-time complexity, and it's far cheaper than trying to mess with the PBX dial plan. Any of you seen this kind of a model? Seen it, Ed? Yeah. So work for you? Yep. Works very well, doesn't it? Right. So we see this kind of thing. It takes all that. Well, it's not supported on this version. We don't do that. We can't integrate. Yada yada. You know, not so much. So this is good, and it's going to answer the customer's questions. And I have an option. If they want presence, if they want to know when this guy over here goes off hook. So let's say somebody over on the PBX goes off hook and calls mom out on the PSTN. Okay, so if I want to know that, if I have a current enough version of a PBX, so probably anything less than 5 years old, you can get presence indication on that PBX. Then you'll have to federate to Link. You'll put in federation between those two. Okay, and if it's XMPP based PBX presence, then there's a link gateway for XMPP. So you can build that kind of a connection across that will, you know, provide the presence so the link user knows that this other person is off hook and they're not going to answer their phone call. Okay. If you have a session manager, by the way, this one was a brilliant discovery that kind of got plopped in our lap at a major university client, huge Avaya customer, and they were charging down the road, but the CIO says, no, I'm not going that way. And, you know, we started looking at, okay, they're going to move to the cloud. That university is going to move to the cloud. And so it got into the question, it was almost like as consultants, we were asked, have we wasted our money upgrading to Avaya Session Manager? So we swallowed hard and said, well, what you spent your money on can be used down the road. Because, in fact, if you have a session manager, the way that Avaya licenses theirs, and I believe it's the way Cisco does and others, this university had like 20-odd thousand user licenses on their PBX. And with that, when they upgraded to session manager, came 2,500 simultaneous session licenses. So those were already in place, already paid for, already part of the Avaya thing, not on a per-user basis. So if I were to go and take, let's say I needed another 5,000 users. We'll make it be an expansive case. And I put those 5,000 other users up in the cloud or even on-premise on a link system. Then I don't need 5,000 more user licenses on the PBX side. I just tell the session manager the addresses of those other users, and the calls will get routed by the session manager inbound or outbound. So I can use the session manager as a directory-based router. And if you say 20,000 users, if you did the typical 20 users per trunk, or you know, take whatever number, let's say 10% of them in the busy hour, that's 2,000 calls in the busy hour. And I've got 2,500 simultaneous sessions. I'm still in good shape. So it's that kind of, I've got enough capacity to do this through a session manager. So one of the things the PBX guys wanted to do was look so cool and so up to date with SIP that they built session managers. The session manager is an easy way to attach link to a PBX. Thank you very much. Okay? And it probably won't cost anymore. So if you've got this conversation going on, it's okay. Now you can argue, well, why should I give them any control into the future? Why don't I just get everybody onto AD and so forth? And my answer is, depends on your political battles. So if you can win that battle, go ahead, win it. But if you can't win it, then let the session manager do the job, and then it's a way to enroll the PBX guy as your buddy, maybe. Well, at least they won't be your enemy. You can get into that category. So then number four is, I don't want to buy new desk phones. And, you know, when you look at the cost of buying a new IP PBX, and you look at those things, I mean, exclude the operating costs, but if you just look at the acquisition, forget the maintenance and the operating costs, but just the acquisition, the phones are easy, 25, maybe 30% of that cost. And if you then say, and besides that, I've got to go out and take the TDM phone off the desk and put an IP phone on the desk, now I've got half of my installation cost is replacing phones, and then I have to put in user training, so I got a big chunk of cost there. So maybe you don't want to touch the phones. And so what would you say about that? We already, I think, know part of it. But some, of course, in the customer environment, some of the users may not want or need a phone anymore. One of our favorites is, it was main stage at Enterprise Connect. 3 or 4 years ago, a woman named Karen Black, then from Wachovia, now part of Wells Fargo. She moved on to TD Bank, but anyway, they move around. But they were saying to their employees, we're going to fund one device for you. You can have a desk phone, or we'll pay for your mobile phone. Take your pick. 40% of the people opted for the mobile phone only. We did a survey for one of our clients recently as they were doing this planning. They said, let's run a survey. They were a university. They love surveys. So we surveyed the users. Over the next 3 years, what would be your preferred device for voice? And only 20% of the people said only a desk phone. Another 25% said only the mobile phone. and the others said a blend. But, you know, that's what they're answering now. We think in 2 or 3 years the number will move further in favor of the mobile only. So in some cases you just don't, you want to be careful not to replace a phone that nobody wants. And one of the favorite stories I have here is from Global Crossing, when they started putting Link into their help desk, and it's a great ROI case, but when they did it, it was a Nortel site, and the help desk guys had phones on their desk. And so they didn't touch the phone. They put Link in parallel. Link could make calls to the outside and that sort of thing. It has enterprise voice on it. But they just started running the station reports, the station usage reports on those phones once a week. And if nobody went off hook, if they didn't go off hook for 30 days on that phone, a tech would show up and say, I see you're not using your phone. Could we use it somewhere else? In other words, can we sell it to a reason? Can we sell it to the used equipment vendor? But they, that, you know, basically the people stopped using the phones of their own accord. And then based on the usage reports, they harvested the phones off the desk. There are no more phones in that department. They're all headsets, you know. So that's an example. It's not that case everywhere. I got it. Many users can't imagine an alternative to a desk phone. I've always had a desk phone. It's a status symbol. I'm not going to let it go. IT leaders want to minimize those costs, both the staff time to run them and the IP phone upgrades. You know, I've got to pay to upgrade them and keep them. And the IT leaders interested in UC, they see Link as a good strategic direction, like that university I mentioned. And so the customer says, I want to install Link with standard and enterprise CALs. In other words, I want outside of enterprise, either in the cloud or on-premise. I want to promote adoption of Link as the enterprise soft phone client, and then I want to integrate Link to the existing PBX. Now, that'll take a plus CAL. That'll take the enterprise voice to provide control of the desk phones, and I want to consider the option of Link enterprise voice based on user adoption. So I want to gradually move. I'm going to put IM presence and conferencing out there on every desk, and then I'm going to promote the use of enterprise voice and let it grow. I've had clients that are more blunt than that. I want to get everybody enabled with enterprise voice, and but I still don't want to buy. I don't want to replace the phones. Okay, so we're back to the picture we saw roughly. We saw before, and in this is a real life case where in this case they did use the PBX vendors' plugins, and actually many of their people were on Google Docs, so they used the Aesna plugin as well. So they basically said, okay, I'm going to give you a Link client with a plug-in to control your desk phone. Or you can have your Google Docs client with a plug-in, by the way. The Microsoft people in the room? I know that'll get me fireballs for saying Google Docs. But anyway, it'll work. You know, you basically can plug it in. The user still has that one experience, the Link client, and they can control the desk phone without a plus CAL in that case, just controlling it on the PBX. Then if you want to move them to enterprise voice, you can. So in this case, they have plugins for the Windows PCs and the OS X Macs. Now the trick is that these vendor plugins, let's talk about these vendor plugins. I'll do it on the next slide, never mind. But Avaya, Cisco, Mitel, NEC, Unify, formerly named Siemens Enterprise Communications, they all have these plugins. And by the way, the reason they have these plugins is they're desperate to be part of the collaborative experience. And for most companies, the collaborative experience starts with email or IM. It doesn't start with a phone call. Okay, so that's because it's document-centric. The request for voice and video in some configurations are passed to the PBX, and calls are delivered on the desk phone or the PBX's soft client via the plug-in. Now, that's the trick here, is that when you make that call, if the user's opted for the soft phone, it'll actually launch the PBX vendor's soft phone out of the Link client, but it'll launch that soft phone. Okay, now... This is an example from Avaya. So this is the Avaya client application 6.3 with a Link 2013 client. So they've got Link presence. Avaya publishes busy in a call status. So if the user's off hook, you'll get that. You can start IM. This is blue is for Link. Or you can start a voice call on Avaya, additional contact numbers. Notice the little drop-down menu here. This is really important. IBM SameTime does the same thing, or IBM Connections now. They have a menu here, and this menu lets you choose how to make the call. And I'll come back to that in a minute. Avaya settings down here, this is your settings option, your options. Call forwarding indicator, message waiting, bridge sharing, you don't have to turn that on. what mode you want to be in, desk phone, your computer, other phones. Now, the trick about this client, by the way, is that it's plugged into Link, but only on the PCs, not on your smartphones and not on your tablets. Okay, they don't do that yet. They may never do it. We'll see. But so that's where you put the Link client out on those devices, and the users start making Link peer-to-peer calls, and then they say, can't I make a PSTN call off this device? If they're on a cell phone and they're on Link and they click a phone number, the cell phone will make the call anyway. It doesn't route through the PBX, but it'll make the call. And so in over here, they're also showing an email client. They show Link presence with the email address, and right-click the contact card, and now you get call work. This is the drop-down menu again in the contact card, just like the menu function over here. So this works. Now, the secret, the dirty little secret of these clients, I'll tell you the specific of Avaya, they're really brassy about it. But what they do when they install this, they disable voice and video calling peer-to-peer on Link. So what they say is, we want control of all the real-time calls, voice and video, will route through my PBX. Now, when we challenged them on that, and we got all the way up to product management, and they said, well, if the customer asks us, we'll hack the registry to take that out. And what they just exposed, of course, is they're not hacking the registry to put Link peer-to-peer calling back. They hacked the registry to stop it. So why don't you please unhack my registry? You know, and so don't tell me I'm the hacker and you're the hackee, you know. So stop hacking my registry, because it's absolutely possible. Now, what will happen if you leave Link peer-to-peer calling, not enterprise voice, just peer-to-peer voice and video. If you leave that on, in other words, if Avaya politely hacks your registry, then you'll get, the user will have a menu here of what happens. So they'll have a chance to make the call on Link or make the call on the phone, on the PBX. And so they'll see a drop-down menu whenever they click the call button. So it'll take them one extra click, but they'll have still Link peer-to-peer. And Avaya won't have hijacked that, okay? Which means that'll work for Federation and other things. Because if you leave the Avaya hack in there, then your peer-to-peer Federation communications won't work, right? So it's possible to do. It works. It's not that expensive. Mostly, the companies that have an IP PBX are already licensed for this stuff, so there's no additional cost. So this is a possibility for you to consider. By the way, let me stop. Questions about that whole idea?
I think the other benefit, Marty, is you only need the standard cal instead of getting the plus.
Yes, you don't need the plus cals. You don't have to have plus cals for what I just said. Don't have to buy them. But if your users start asking, or if you've got a plan to take away their desk phones or whatever, then you'll have to get the enterprise voice, the plus cal. Right, so it's a licensing question and deployment, and it'll influence the number of servers you have to stand up too. Right. Okay, existing PBX, IP PBX as a PSTN gateway. And by the way, if you've noticed, the last one, if you go back to the last one with existing desk phones, I just made the PBX into a telephone gateway, really. And if I, especially if I put enterprise voice on my Link side, I'm using the PBX as a telephone control cabinet, right? It's an appliance. And that's where it's going to go over time, by the way. And this university we were talking about, they have over 11,000 analog endpoints and fax machines. And, you know, I don't need to go buy, you know, ATA or adapters for all those devices. I'll just leave the PBX there. I'll have to be smart about how I reconfigure it. I may split my PBX into two and put all the analog on one and then cut my licensing down on that one and cut my maintenance costs down on that. Okay, so I'll have to be careful how I manage it so I don't end up overpaying on maintenance. But still, you know, I can use the PBX as a gateway to analog devices because I already own it. But now if I want to use it as a gateway to the PSTN, then, you know, I've got this well-designed network in place. And what I mean by that, the PBX is wired into a carrier. And when I say wired into the carrier, I don't just mean physically. The person who buys it gets invited to their vendor conferences. Maybe they're good golf players. Maybe they buy dinners and drinks. Am I talking real? This is what happens. They've got relationships with these carriers that's beyond the invoice. And they've spent a lot of time designing this. They may have distributed trunks. They may have trunking and connection and connectivity and OPXs and things. They've spent a lot of years setting up. So they want to keep those in place. And that's that whole point about network topology and terminations. And they want favorable relationships with the carrier. So the customer request is the link users have to be able to make and receive voice calls. Link conferencing must include voice telephone access. And I got to use the existing network. Right. And so you know how that's going to look. It's basically going to say, OK, I can use SIP trunks out of link. And I'm going to come through gateway devices here. So the link SIP trunks connect to a PBX, IP, PBX gateways. The PBXs then routes the calls between the link system and the public network. Older PBXs may require addition of a SIP to T1 and several options for maintaining the incoming call routing to the link system. So one of the options for if I have incoming calls, since I'm using it here, I could either have the PBX route those calls if I've got my population split like all these numbers in the dial plan belong on link, these locations, and all these belong on the IPPBX. That's pretty easy. You say, okay, for these extension numbers, for this part of the dial plan, they all go to link. But if I don't have that clean a dial plan, then I would probably look at Sonos, Audio Codes, the companies out there like that who have Active Directory enabled gateways. And that way, you can basically have the gateway look at your AD, and it'll actually synchronize on a daily basis or as frequently as you tell it to. And it'll look at your AD and say, does this user belong on link or belong on the PBX? And it'll just route the call that way. Okay? So this is pretty easy to do. And if the PBX already has a gateway to a gateway out there, if these are SIP trunks, you'll already have an SBC here that may have gateway capabilities. You may have to put another gateway in to do that, but it works. And so you basically can say, I don't have to touch carriers. I don't have to spend any time, because the minute I start touching carriers, I'm going to be paying reconfiguration costs. I may have to renegotiate my contract. It'll take a long time. So you don't want to touch that public network interface if you don't have to. So I'd say this is a good trick to have in your bag, is I can use that PBX for the cost of nothing up to the cost of a couple gateways, and I can let my network be where it is. Okay? And by the way, that doesn't mean that I can't come off the backside of my link system out through Ethernet backbone carriers and stop calling through the PSTN or using link federation off the backside. You know, you can have a lot of traffic coming off the link system going out the other way. But you know, for your voice calls with that established network, you can just use what's there. Link in other apps. So this is social. This is a real customer environment. In fact, we've had 3 customer environments like this so far in the last 2 years. So the customer environment, they have an existing standards and deployments for user interfaces, UIs or portals. You want to know what the most common UI out there is in our large enterprises now that we've run into? It's IBM Connections. And you don't see it happening because IBM doesn't sell it through the IT department. They sell it through the HR department. And HR says, sometimes they sell it through marketing. So it's either marketing for social marketing to their clients and innovation, or it's HR because IBM says, this will help your people be more productive, and you're in charge of productivity, Mr. HR Vice President. So we've seen these whole rollouts happen. The CIO is told that that's going to happen. Not asked. So you get some pretty interesting situations. But there's also cases where you have portals and other apps out there. Enterprise-wide, like a social platform, specific business apps like SAP, Salesforce, Dynamics, etc., and they can't or won't change this experience. So the customer says, no, I don't want to see a link client on the desk. This is how we're doing our work now. And by the way, because we're consultants, we hear the IBM story as well as we hear the Microsoft. IBM is a very mature, 5-year mature story about social for business. And Connections is a workflow portal. It's not a social client. It's a place where you deliver work. And they have feeds out of SAP and that kind of stuff, delivering transactions that people work on. So it's a work dispatch system. And it's not going to stop. That's why Yammer was, I'm glad Microsoft bought Yammer. It's going to be important that Microsoft catch up in that regard. But they need communications in these interfaces. So they're looking for the best method, and they're willing to use Link if it can deliver those functions. And so here's a picture of the actual one. I put Contoso on here to block the name of the actual client, but just let's just say it's a big insurance company. And you know, this is IBM Connections skinned to their brand. This is their corporate color. It's their corporate brand. It's this. It's the company portal now. And so it turns out that in an IBM contact card, just like we saw earlier on a Link contact card, it's actually an extensible contact card, the IBM business card, they call it. You can go in and put any connections in there you want. So you can put a Link URL right into that card, and so when they go click to call, it's the opposite of what the PBX guys try to do to Link, or to a Link, yeah. You can actually go put that plugin in there, and then you pop the Link client, and now from then on you're using Link. And you can escalate, de-escalate, do all the stuff you do with Link. But it starts over here, and you can do that on the video call, voice call, IM. So basically whatever media they start with, it's going to start Link. Okay, and that's true in almost all the things. Jive has that. Jive software, social, is out there. You can do this in Jive. You can do this in Salesforce. You can do it in SAP. So this is an important thing to remember if the customer already has a portal or a user experience on those desktops. You know, it's not going to block the deployment. And number seven is the Link as an apps platform. And this one is really, I think it's the jewel in the crown right now. We're just getting to where apps are going to open up the door. Many of you, as we talked before the session, I mean, you're thinking about more the enterprise voice side. But it may be that finding some crucial applications in your company will also open some doors, whether it helps justification because the app is going to have a huge ROI, or whether it's why you want to have the Link platform on board. Because if you go compare Link, the two best in the portfolio of communications companies for large enterprises, mid to large enterprises today, the two best platforms for communications-enabling apps and business processes are Microsoft and IBM. IBM because it's built on the WebSphere basis, and Microsoft because they've been an API-based architecture and mindset all along. If you go into the PBX world, their API environments are, you know, probably the most flexible right now is Siemens, who basically started, now called Unify, who started their platform based on live communication server back in the early 2000s. But Avaya's is still clunky based on stuff they, you know, they had a platform, but then they ditched it and tried to bring the Nortel platform forward. Cisco had Cisco Unified Application Environment, but ditched that and went to a Jabber client, but the Jabber client only works for the Jabber API, I mean, only works on the client side, not on the server side. On the server side, you got to use native CUCM APIs. It's not pretty out there. So, you know, this conference and the IBM Connection conference, I mean, this is the place where UC apps can live most effectively, in my consulting opinion. So they've got a tradition, they've got a commitment to that based on telecom, but they see the applications for UC, but the PBX tools aren't there. They're limited or they're hard to use. They need contract developers for the UC applications. They don't want to hire a big app staff on-house. And by the way, so now you say, okay, where's the client, where's the developer community? It's with IBM and Microsoft, or Microsoft and IBM by priority. And the customer wants an economical platform. They want a large pool of qualified economical developers. They want to interface through the existing PBX. We've already talked about how you can do that. And they want licensing by concurrent sessions, not based on every phone number. And so you can do that really well with Link. The Link standard edition servers don't exist in 2013, but they were a very cool way to do this. With 2013, you got to get enterprise edition, so it'll take you a couple servers to do the job instead of just one. But still, it works really sweetly. And so if you want to enable click-to-call within an electronic health record in a hospital, like a particular client of ours, The best way to do it, even though they had an Avaya PBX, was to stand up a link server and use the link server to integrate into the Cerner Healthcare M-Pages. So there's a tab inside each electronic health record that the physician or care provider can click, and there's the calling tree for that patient out of directories and so forth. Who's on shift caring for this patient? Which doctors are on call for this patient? You know, and then which doctors are on call by specialty? It's all on one page. Click to IM, click to call, click to text. So it's that kind of a model. It's really cool in healthcare, by the way. But you can do that, you know, basically with a link server, and all you need is enough licenses for the concurrent sessions you need. You don't have to license every doctor or every patient, right? So it's that kind of a model. So if you find any sweet spots like this, this becomes an enterprise architecture conversation. This becomes a CIO conversation, and it becomes a line of business conversation. So like in that case, the chief medical information officer was saying, yeah, I want this, and that's if that's the best way to get it, then I'm going to put Link in my hospital. It wasn't Link for phones yet, but it was on the way. You see, the foot is in the door. The beachhead's established. And, you know, architecturally, it'll look much like the last picture we saw, but the thing that's not shown on this chart is how off of this side I'll be using the APIs out to the whole world of applications. Yeah, I can run as an entry level. I can put it on a single VM platform. It's going to take me probably 3 or 4 server roles, but I can still get it on a single platform. If I need incoming, outgoing PSTN work and I don't want to route it through here, I can just put a plus cal and get SIP trunks. And I can present the application through web pages and web portals and so forth. So what I'm telling you my real life stories. I hope it's been useful to you that the customers want Link to adapt to their goals, adapt to their environment, create minimal disruption, deliver large immediate returns, which is done by doing specific apps, not by replacing the PBX, be delivered by a single responsible party. That would be probably you in the room, whether you're the enterprises here or the service providers here. Systems integrators, even when it's not standard. By the way, they take the responsibility. So if you're a provider or a system integrator here and your customer is saying, I need these other things, then subcontract it to the responsible party. Find the AV integrator or the Cisco partner or whatever and have them subcontract to you. Don't say to the customer, well, you go subcontract with them. You know, be responsible for it. Take ownership. And then, you know, we've seen some real life examples. So that's really what I had to offer. I hope it's been useful to you. We're right about on the time that I expected. And if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them. If you do, please use the microphone because this is being recorded. None? Okay. Well, I sure hope it's been helpful. Thank you very much for your time.